Remaker's Mark, Episode 42, Gone with the Wind. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in Episode 42, where we are discussing one of the most beloved films of all time, 1939's Gone with the Wind. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight? And what is your favorite epic? Now, it could be a film, book, anything. What is your favorite epic series, whatever?
I'm doing well, thank you. And I am currently reading War and Peace, so I'm going to say War and Peace.
That little thing?
That little pamphlet by a little Leo Tolstoy, War and Peace.
Leo Toy Story?
I am a mere like 400 pages from the end, and honestly, it feels like I'm sliding down a hill to the climax. It's great.
Wow. That's going to be a hell of a slide.
I'm looking forward to it.
Good luck. I hope they find peace. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you doing tonight, and what is your favorite epic?
I am doing quite well also. I have not read one page of War and Peace, so I actually am going to pick both the film version and book version of the Lord of the Rings.
That's a good pick. I have a feeling somebody might be Wixed. We'll see. In this case, Nilsson did.
Yes,
maybe not. I don't know.
I am verbed.
Good work. You have become verb. Destroyer of worlds. Good job.
Thank you.
Lee Hotlanta, how are you tonight, and what is a favorite epic of yours?
I'm doing well, and I'm pretty sure you guys know, I'm just going to let somebody else guess.
Does it rhyme with Schmand of Schmruthers?
Yes, it does.
I knew it. I should have said Schmushmashific, but
the Smothers right. Brothers is not an epic.
Both the miniseries and the book. Although the book is not that long, but you get the idea.
Yeah, yeah. Did they lengthen it out appropriately? I mean, you talk about it all the time, so I'm assuming yes, but they didn't fill in gaps too much?
No, they did a fair job. I mean, they could have maybe spanned 12 episodes. I think that was their original plan, but they only did 10.
Okay, got it. So they actually pulled back a little bit.
Yeah.
Cool. Mark Josting, how are you, and what is your favorite epic?
I'm very well, thanks. And my favorite epic is an anime called Princess Mononoke.
Oh, nice. That's interesting. I like that. That's a good pick. I think it's different in scale from other epics, but still epic nonetheless.
Yeah, I honestly have no idea if it's technically an epic, but it feels epic for sure.
Yeah, for sure. From a worldly perspective, heck yeah. Nice. Good pick. My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host once again this fine evening. And on account of this, the season finale this season, just kicking some serious butt, I'm going to go with Game of Thrones. I've only read part of book one. I've read some of the graphic novels of book one as well, but I've seen all of the show. And Game of Thrones is just something else. It's pretty extraordinary. And it did influence my casting a little bit this go around. So foreshadowing a little bit of what's to come with that. So Game of Thrones.
I just started it, and yeah, it really is something else.
Nice. Good, good. Jer, where are you in the series? I know you've been keeping up-ish.
In the book series or the movie, the show series?
Both.
Book series, I am in book two. Show series, I am in season five?
So not the current one, but last one.
I think not even that.
Oh, okay. So four or five. Okay. Because six just finished.
Six just finished, so then I must be in season four, the end of season four.
Nice.
Yeah, not to give away too much for those who haven't seen it, but the last episode that I remember watching, I'm just going to tell you the name of the episode, nothing else, but the last episode I remember watching is called The Mountain and the Viper.
Oh, God, yeah.
And
That's a good one.
I had to stop watching for a little bit. And then I got back largely because of one of my favorite characters is the Viper of Dorne, and he's just so cool.
He's extraordinary. Good call. All right, cool. Well, before we get into Gone with the Wind, we want to do a quick stream team recommendation. And since Andy chose Gone with the Wind, he gets to be our recommender. So, Andy, what is your stream team recommendation this week?
I have dove in dived in.
I said that exact same thing in a meeting earlier today because I couldn't remember either. So right there with you.
Dove, and dived in.
That's what you said.
Have diven wholeheartedly and head first into the pool of the Great British Baking Show.
Yes,
you should.
My Lord, I love it so much.
That's a great show.
The show is so great. Yeah.
And the other night we had a couple episodes recorded and we watched one. It was the bread episode, which sounds so just simple and boring to say that, but a man made a sculpture of a lion out of bread and it was amazing.
Cool.
And then we had another episode queued up for it that we were just going to mainline it. And it turned out to be, it was preempted by a Charlie Rose news special because of the, I think the coup in Turkey, perhaps.
Granted,
it's news and it's international news and it's quite important, but we were both just like, oh, I wanted my dessert episode.
Exactly. I would rather see them make something Turkish. Turkish delight, perhaps.
Perhaps. So anyway, we found another time it was on, so we have that waiting for us.
Good.
So the Great British Baking Show, I really cannot recommend it enough.
Yep. I agree. It's a good one. There are shows on Netflix that we will link to, and then it's on PBS right now.
Correct.
Right? Yeah, okay. Gotcha. Cool. Well, yeah, good recommendation. I think we all wholeheartedly share that with you. All right. So let us move on to Gone with the Wind. So, Andy, this is your pick. So why don't you do a summary of the film and then a brief bit of our history with it?
Of course. Gone with the Wind is a 1939 epic tale of the South during and after the Civil War, specifically following the exploits of the O'Hara family and Scarlett, the heroine of our story. Scarlett is a young belle at the outbreak of the war and finds herself pining for a man who is engaged to another. So she marries the next man she finds. This does not end well and establishes a precedent and pattern for the rest of our four-hour film. Hilarity ensues.
Yep. 4 hours and change.
Yep. 4 hours. This is
4 hours of hilarity.
This is a hours of hijinks and knee-slapping guffaws. I have a lot of memories of this movie as a child. I have two older sisters, and I remember them watching this movie a lot. And because they were, because they outnumbered me and were older than me, if I wanted to watch TV, it was often whatever they were watching, and it was usually this movie. So I can hear the kind of bumper theme music in and out of commercial breaks in my head at will, which was actually kind of soothing. I kind of liked it.
This would be like a 6-hour movie with commercials.
I think it was. It might have even been like a 2-day event on TV that my parents recorded, because it was recorded off the TV VHS tape that we had that was watched so many times that the sound was getting that warbly quality to it. But yeah, and despite the many times that I watched this film, they were all, like I said, I was a kid whenever I watched them. So all of the political overtones and historical significance of the movie was just lost on me at the time. So watching it actually now as an adult was interesting just to see its perspective on how it treated this time in American history. We'll talk about that more in the second half. Lee, you saw this before, but kind of for an interesting reason.
Yeah, Well, for people who don't know, I was a design major in college. So there was a lot of learning to pay attention to details like wainscoting and, you know, decorative carving and moldings and that sort of thing. To this day, if I looked at an antique side chair from the Georgian or Queen Anne era, I could probably tell you where it was built. But I digress. We needed to watch this. Our professor wanted us to watch this movie in class, kind of as we were doing other work. But he wanted us to watch it just because he knew how historically accurate all of the set decoration was. So, you know, kind of going through, and I was kind of half paying attention to it. But, you know, whenever he would get our attention and say, oh, look at this, look at the way, you know, the curtains are draped and look at, you know, the staircase, that sort of thing. That's all I remembered of it. I didn't remember anything that actually happened in the plot because I was only like half paying attention to it. So to watch it again now was, I guess, kind of an interesting venture because, you know, I actually got to get an idea of what the story was and, you know, what it meant and what the characters were up to. So, yeah.
All right.
And I want to say this is probably top five of the AFI top 100. I don't have it up in front of me, but I could see it being like second or third, maybe something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's up there.
Yeah.
It's up there.
It's definitely
with like,
got the...
It's up there with like Schindler's List and Lawrence of Arabia and Bridge on the River Kwai, I think.
Yeah. Let's see here. It is at number six on the AFI top 100.
What's ahead of it?
Singing in the Rain, Raging Bull, Casablanca, The Godfather, and Citizen Kane.
Huh.
One of which we've done.
As I say, we've already done one of those.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. All right, cool. Well, let us move on to the main topic of our part one here, which is recasting. So we have two major characters here and five minor characters. The first major character is that of Rhett Butler. Mark, tell us about Rhett.
Captain Rhett Butler is a captain. Not in the sense that he is a military officer, but rather that he is in charge of a boat. He is something of a gentleman mercenary, so is exactly as smooth as the former would give you to believe, and exactly as smarmy as the latter would. Smooth and smarmy. He was originally portrayed by Clark Gable, who was also smooth and smarmy.
Truth.
Yeah. So, I don't know if there needs to be much more to look for in casting other than smooth and smarmy. Because I feel like you get somebody who is slick and gentlemanly, but can be just a little bit greasy, or maybe a lot greasy, then this will do it. I also wanted my Hret to be a very imposing figure, and so I went with Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Ooh, nice.
Thank you. Yeah, we know Jeffrey Dean Morgan from lots of things. Back in the days of Grey's Anatomy, he made a name in that. Currently, I think he's the big bad in The Walking Dead. My favorite thing of his is Watchmen, where he was the comedian and just killed that role. He was awesome. But yeah, so I think get him all dolled up, a little bit of a mustache, and and I really like the figure that he could cut in this role.
Yeah, I think the only problem is that he would look like vaguely Spanish were he to have the Rhett Butler stash. But I think we can make it work. I don't know what the hell Rhett Butler was supposed to look like, but he looked pretty weird in the original. Though dashing, don't get me wrong, and slick and smooth. Yeah, you're right, but such a weird mustache.
Yeah, weird mustache. That's my new band name, by the way. It's Weird Mustache.
Weird mustache. Don't you think? It's a weird mustache. Like, if you just look at him face on and you didn't know anything about the movie or the character, you'd just be like, he kind of looks like the guy on the front of Mad Magazine a little bit too much.
Alfred E. Newman?
Like, it'd be like Alfred E. Newman with a mustache painted on. But I think that's a good pick, Mark. Sorry, I digress.
Yes, you do. Andy, how about you?
Yes, I do.
I also wanted smooth and smarmy as... I mean, you're following in the footsteps of Clark Gable, and this role was Clark Gable. I chose Henry Cavill for this role.
Okay, I can see it.
Largely based on his performance in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., where he played a Napoleon Solo. And I like that he was in that movie, while he was very selfish isn't the right term, but he definitely had a high self-preservation instinct, which I think the character of Rhett Butler does.
Yeah.
He is nothing if not a survivor and often kind of a thriver. He always not only makes sure he survives, but comes out on top somehow. And that was how I felt the character of Napoleon Solo and The Man from U.N.C.L.E. was as well. And I think Henry Cavill, I think people would agree, is a handsome devil and can kind of give that little crooked half smile and can swoon. I don't even know if he needs the mustache. I'm kind of ambivalent on mustache. I think he can be just as successful without it, but I'd be curious to see him with it. So Henry Cavill as Captain Rhett Butler.
Nice. I think the only thing you have going against it is that Batman, Superman, that whole world has not treated him very well. And Man from U.N.C.L.E. didn't do great, unfortunately, because the trailers look like a lot of fun. But
I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. It's on... I think it's on HBO right now, so I should check it out.
Yeah, it's worth seeing.
Okay, cool.
So, Lee, to you.
Well, I wanted someone who had the right kind of swagger, but also a really great sense of humor. A lot of whatever humor there is in the movie comes from Clark Gable. So I thought the best actor to do that would be George Clooney.
Oh, my.
Nice.
And I wanted...
I spent my entire casting, which took a long time, trying not to cast George Clooney, basically.
Wow.
Well, so. I think... for this, I kind of wanted to go a little bigger just because it's Gone with the Wind, and I would expect in a remake that, you know, they'd get a lot of big names to do it. So, yeah, George Clooney, because he's got a good balance of the qualities that I think Rhett Butler had.
It's hard to argue with that.
Is he a little old?
Well,
I don't think so.
I don't think
isn't
so.
Isn't Scarlett supposed to basically be a teenager when this whole thing starts?
Yeah, but he looks really, not really old. He looks 40s in the
original,
I mean,
Scarlett's supposed to be.
I think so.
Clark Gable would have been 38, 39 when this came out.
Yeah. I mean, it's borderline lecherous.
Rhett was
but
supposed
not quite.
To have, you know, already gotten kicked out of college, basically. And Scarlett's supposed to be a teenager. It's not unexpected in those days.
No.
Yeah. It's not the Romeo and Juliet thing where usually they cast that to actually look, you know, to look that age. It's very different from that.
Yeah. I thought Clark Gable looked, I mean, much, much older than Vivian Leigh, but I just sort of understood that that's, you know, it's a much different time. It was over 100 years ago. I'm sure that was more acceptable. So
yeah,
he was 12 years older than she was.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
The actors were.
Yeah. Yeah. And how long does the time span in this movie? I could never quite tell.
Well, it goes from the beginning, you know, pre-war. So we'll say like 1860, 1861 to well after the war. I don't know if it would span a 10-year period. But there's a significant part of the movie that occurs after the Civil War is gone.
At least like 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Yes. So by the time they get together, she's probably out of teenage years. She's, you know, a widower, what, 2 times over?
Yeah. He's her
by
third
By the time
husband.
They finally get, yeah, yep. Those were the days.
But nice. Let's move on
Good
to
pick,
Dallas.
Lee.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, you bet. So I had a really hard time with this, as I've mentioned, and I really wanted to find someone who, did that smooth and smarmy thing, but I wanted smarmy to win just a little bit. I wanted smarmy to win more than I wanted smooth to win. And so the person that I went with for this is, Ben Mendelsohn. What you have probably most recently seen him in is the trailer for Star Wars Rogue One. He is the caped Empire figure who just looks badass as all get out. He was in The Dark Knight Rises. He played one of the kind of corrupt people in town. He's also in the Netflix series Bloodline. He plays one of the brothers in that. He is, I don't know, I think he can be really smooth, but I'm almost worried when I see his face as at what's kind of going on behind there. Like everything that he says, it feels like there is something else behind that. And I feel like Clark Gable did that really well. Like there's the scene where they come back from the quote unquote brothel, which was actually when they went to sort of raid the people who attacked Scarlet. And you don't quite know what to believe. So he says that, you know, he brings someone back. They're supposed to be drunk, but it turns out one of them is shot. But you never quite believe what he's saying. You know what I mean? Like you don't quite know what the truth is and you don't quite know where his intentions lie. And I really wanted this character to have that. And I think Ben Mendelsohn will do that really, really well. I have not watched Frontline, but apparently he very much steals the show. He's supposed to be quite excellent in that. So I will watch that eventually. But I really haven't seen too much aside from The Dark Knight Rises, but I just really like kind of what goes on behind his face and his eyes. Cool. All right. Good talk. I just explained it so well. That's what I'll say. All right, Jer, on to you. Close us out here for Rhett.
I was not going for smooth and smarmy. I was just going for somebody who I thought would pull off a pretty convincing Southern accent. So I went with a New Zealander.
So you meant Southern Hemisphere.
Isn't that what yes. Southern means?
Yes.
Southern accent is... anyway. I went with Carl Urban, who I just thoroughly enjoy in every role that he has been in.
I considered him as well.
He's got quite a wide range. He's Bones in the new Star Trek movies. He was in the Lord of the Rings movies. He is soon to be in the remake of Pete's Dragon, which I can't believe they're remaking, and I'm very excited about. A bunch of stuff. He's got work all over town. So he was in Dread. He's the new Dread.
He was great in that.
He was, he made what could have been a very boring movie pretty good. So, yeah, I just think that he's got a lot of charm, a lot of sly smirking to lend the movie, which it desperately needs.
I could definitely see that. I feel like there needs to be a back-to-back movie night of Attack the Block and Dread. Because those two movies are like meant to be together. That would be just a ton of fun and violence and so much good stuff. Nice. Good pick. That we'll mention that in part two here. That was one listener feedback that we got as a casting suggestion. So someone's with you.
I totally forgot to ask anybody.
That's all right. I gotcha. All right, so in the role of Rhett, originally played by Clark Gable, Mark went with Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Andy went with Henry Cavill, Lee went with George Clooney, I went with Ben Mendelsohn, and Jer went with Carl Urban. Now on to Scarlett O'Hara. Lee, tell us about Scarlett.
Originally played by Vivian Lee, quite well, actually. The heroine of our story, Scarlett, is a spoiled Southern brat who will stop at nothing to get what she wants. She longs for Ashley's affection while simultaneously rebuffing Rhett's advances. Sadly, a long series of tragedies seems to be the only thing that forces her to grow up. As you can tell by my description, I don't really like this character that much. I don't think she's that likable of a character. She might be sympathetic at times, but I mean, she's exactly that. She's a spoiled brat. But she has a really good survival instinct, and she's tough when she needs to be. So I went with Emily Blunt. Someone who I thought could portray that level of, I guess, self-preservation and at times be kind of unlikable. So I just thought she was a perfect fit for this one. In fact, she's the first person I thought of for this role.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, totally.
I would have some qualms with the age, but she can look young, you know, so it wouldn't be bad. It also might make that a little bit less creepy, especially with your George Clooney pick. It might feel a little bit more balanced in that regard. So, yeah.
Well, and I didn't really think that Scarlett O'Hara looked like a teenager in the beginning.
So, no. So. Acted like it and hung around with people who seemed like it. But
Behaved like it.
Yeah.
But that's my pick for Scarlett.
Nice. Good one. I love her. I think she's fantastic.
Yeah.
We've picked her quite a few times. Not quite penalty box worthy, but I think... good stuff.
Thanks. On to Jer.
I am going A-list with my pick and just shooting for top billing and went with Jennifer Lawrence. I have seen her do Southern, although it was a little different type of Southern when she did Winter's Bone back in 2010, kind of her first big breakout role. It's definitely not Southern Belle, but I believe that she's definitely got that in her. And she's got that really great balance that the Scarlett O'Hara character needs of just charming and beautiful and cultured and balanced with this sort of feisty, almost driven kind of get what you want at all costs kind of mentality. And so there's really two conflicting pieces of that character that somebody would need to do. And so I think that she could pull off both of those without making it feel fake on one side or the other.
Totally. The headstrong aspect of that would be spot on, you know, just not taking no for an answer, sticking up for herself to a fault. I think she would do that really well.
Sorry, Mike was muted. Yes, that is correct. So that is the best pick so far. Oh, wait, no, I wasn't the first pick. Sorry. Sorry, Lee. I thought I was the first one.
Anyway. Taken.
Whew. So, Dells, who do you pick for Scarlett O'Hara?
Well, I referenced in the beginning parts my love of Game of Thrones, and I'm going there for this pick. I went with Natalie Dormer. She plays Marjorie Tyrell in that series, who is a very manipulative, willing to do anything to get what she wants, seeking royalty, seeking wealth, seeking power. She just has a look that is young, but not too young. Like, she could totally play a teenager. She was born in 1982, so I mean, she's not, you know, super young, but she's got a pretty young look. And she is, if she plays 18, she'll look like she calculates at a 25-year-old's pace, if you know what I mean. Like, she's very much has that look of like going on behind her eyes is always scheming and going for that. So I don't want it to be like kind of creepy or overboard like it kind of is in Game of Thrones, but I just think that she would be really, really excellent in that. I don't know if she can do a Southern accent. I don't care. I think she'll do great. She is just really, really wonderful, and I think she'd be a good fit in there. So Natalie Dormer was my pick.
Her character is basically Scarlett O'Hara in medieval times.
It is. It's pretty much Game of Thrones of Scarlett O'Hara. Yeah. She marries people. They die. She marries another. They die. It totally is. Jeez, I didn't even think about that.
It kind of sounds like all medieval times, though.
Yes.
She is just outstanding, though. I really like her. I want to see her in more things.
Yep. Agreed. She was in the Hunger Games movies. She was kind of the what do they call them? The prop films that they make, propaganda films. Yeah. She was like the director of those. Yeah. She was great.
Cressida, yeah. I think her name is.
Yeah, nice work.
I liked her in those movies.
Yeah, she did very well. So, yeah, that's my pick, is Natalie Dormer. Andy, on to you. Who did you pick for Scarlett?
For Scarlett O'Hara, I chose Lucy Boynton. You may not know who she is. I would suggest that you get to know her. I saw her most recently in Sing Street, where she plays Rafina, the female lead of that character, of that film, rather. This is a tough one for me to cast because... I mean, you guys described, she is a spoiled brat who ultimately seeks her own interests above anything else. And when she finds something that she wants, she goes after it 100%. Incidentally, I was doing a little IMDb research while you guys were talking. This movie apparently spans about 10 or 11 years from about 1860. I guess it'd be 61 to 71 is what what IMDb says. FYI. And that Scarlett O'Hara is 16 at the beginning of the movie.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, Lucy Boynton, I think, would be able to play. I think she fits the look of the character for some reason, even though I know Vivian Leigh is simply the actress and not the character. I had a really hard time seeing anyone other than a fair-haired brunette in this kind of role. I'm not sure why, but it just stuck with me that way. And, I really liked her character of Rafina in Sing Street. It was a very vulnerable character who had a lot of self-preservation. I know I referenced that earlier, but really what she was doing for a lot of the things was for her own good and not necessarily for anybody else's. And I think she would just do well to pine after my Ashley pick and kind of leave a train wreck in her wake wherever she went. So Lucy Boynton was my pick.
Yeah, looking at her IMDb page, man, she has got the look big time.
Yeah, I think so.
Nice.
So,
boy, I really need to see Sing Street.
It was really fun. Nice. And the music was really good, too. So I recommend it.
Nice.
So, Mark, who is your Scarlett?
My Scarlett is an actress named Lily Collins. She doesn't have as expansive a resume as I would expect from an actress of her talent. Yeah, she's very talented. Basically, she's the second coming of Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah, I can see that.
And even played her daughter in a movie called Stuck in Love, which is a really good movie, by the way. But Lily Collins probably is most famous for Mirror, Mirror, that movie where Julia Roberts is supposed to be an evil queen or something. don't know. But also played the lead in the film version of The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones. And
what the heck, you know, is has that?
Apparently, The Mortal Instruments is another one of those kind of fantasy book series. Yeah, that,
Percy Jackson-y kind of
tween Harry's books.
Yeah.
You, Mark, you referenced that film earlier, didn't you, with another movie?
I did. I because I in our Supergirl episode, my pick for Supergirl was Jemima West, who was also in that movie. And I found out about her because I watched that film researching Lily Collins. And decided to go with Jemima West instead. But Scarlett O'Hara is much better suited for Lily Collins.
I like it.
Because she really has awesome range, and I wanted to be able to get that fake sweetness of the high society stuff, and I really wanted my pick for Scarlett to be able to be just venomous. And I love Lily Collins' range. I love her expression.
There's a picture of her on IMDb of her at an awards show, and she's dolled up in some type of 1930s.
Yeah, kind of flattery.
Hairstyle and getup, and yeah, it's spot on. And also, she's the daughter of Phil Collins.
I was just going to say that.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
That's true.
Yep.
So, of course, she's going to have a range.
She's a great tenor.
Nice. Yeah, I've only seen Mirror Mirror, I think, of everything she's been in. She was in The Blind Side, I guess. I don't remember her in that. Maybe she's part of the family. But yeah, she was good in that. I think your expressiveness thing is well put. I remember that well. Cool. All right. Well, that wraps up Scarlett, originally played by Vivian Lee. Chose Emily Blunt. Jer chose Jennifer Lawrence. I chose Natalie Dormer. Andy chose Lucy Boynton. And Mark chose Lily Collins, or as I like to call her, Lil Collins. up next is the role of Prissy, our first minor character. Prissy is one of the slaves on Scarlet's plantation and would be a sympathetic character were it not for the fact that she lies about being able to deliver babies and has quite possibly the most annoying voice in the history of film.
it's up there.
It's rough. And, you know, I'm sure that this role had potential, but I don't know, man. I seriously couldn't get past the voice. It's just awful. So hard to watch. So hard to listen to. The performance was fine. I'm guessing she did what she was told to do, but man, I did not like what they told her to do. So I just wanted somebody who was African-American, right? It goes with the slave side of things, as you know, painful it is to recall that. But I went with Natalie Emmanuel. Speaking of Game of Thrones, she plays Missende in Game of Thrones, which is Danny, one of the main characters, is sort of assistant in Slaver's Bay. So she, in that film, is a slave who has been set free and now serves the queen-to-be, hopefully. And she's great. She's very, very unassuming, but still has a lot of range. She can be very powerful. She's a very trusted compatriot of hers. And they, for someone who is as powerful as Danny is, she goes to her a lot just seeking advice. So I wanted more of that in this. Like, it doesn't have to be, she doesn't have to be powerful, but I just wanted it to be more than it was in the original. So Natalie Emmanuel for Prissy.
So, who's more annoying, Prissy or Mrs. Peacock?
Prissy. Oh, Prissy, by far. Peacock at least has, like, redeeming characteristics and blends in more. This was just, like, nails on chalkboard every time she was on screen. I do want to point out, however, that the original actress's name is Butterfly McQueen,
which is
amazing. That name, like, almost makes up for the performance that was given in the original. So here's to you, Butterfly McQueen, I think. All right, on to Gerald. Lee, tell us about Gerald.
Gerald O'Hara is Scarlett's father and a wealthy landowner who built his fortune from nothing as an Irish immigrant. Scarlett is forced to take the reins from him and preserve the family plantation after his untimely death. I guess I I didn't think a whole lot of this character. I guess I want him to be likable. And, you know, I get the sense that, you know, he doesn't really have the social graces of a wealthy landowner in the South. So there's a bit of charm that goes with that. So I chose Robert De Niro. sticking with my my A-list, I guess.
Irish as the day is long.
Yes.
And a crazy De Niro at that. Like, this character is pretty unstable.
Yeah.
I like this character a lot. I don't know why Gerald O'Hara kind of is just endearing to me. I think that at the beginning of the movie, you kind of get a sense that he's really, like, he's very devoted to his family and really wants what's best for his family, even though he is a Southern sympathizer and his political ideas may be a little out of touch from today's things. But you get kind of the sense that he's overall would seem like a good man, but yeah, he quickly goes way, way crazy and becomes a much more interesting character. So I would love to see De Niro do that. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. Doesn't his wife die and he's just kind of there with her? I mean, it's that's a lot to go through, but yes, I agree.
Yeah. So yeah. De Niro, who by the way is half Irish. So yeah.
Is it the duh part?
I think so. Yeah. Oh, Nero.
Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
So, did you guys see the thing online that some nerds figured out the moment when Robert De Niro stopped caring?
No. When was it?
They took his IMDb history and ran it through some science-y things and figured out that it was, I think, 2002 when Robert De Niro just couldn't give a crap anymore. And they have it all graphed out, and it's really actually pretty convincing.
Awesome. I'll see if I can find that and throw it in the show notes.
It should be pretty easy to find. It was popular for a couple of hours.
Cool.
And as is, you know, that's about the lifespan of anything these days. But
yeah, an internet time, that's 11 years.
I think that's about the time that Pacino stopped caring, too.
I don't know. I feel like his was before then, like Devil's Advocate right around there.
Maybe. Yeah, but he redeemed himself with The Insider.
Yeah, true. And yeah. Angels, not Angels in the Outfield.
Angels in America. Ooh,
that's different. Angels in America. Yeah, yes, thank you. Not the Disney movie about a baseball team. Sheesh. That could not be more different. Sorry, everybody.
But let's move on to Jer with Melanie Hamilton.
Yes, Melanie is Scarlett's sister-in-law and eventual BFF. And she kind of ends up being the moral center of the story as one of the few kind of redeeming characters. She's loving, compassionate, sweet to a fault, and loved by everyone, I guess. she's just kind of a sickly sweet kind of person that really is just trying to do her best to please everyone. And I thought she was a fairly interesting character in the story. I think that she didn't need to be quite as prominent, maybe. Not prominent, that's not the right word. But I thought that her sort of storyline could have been condensed and still told very well. But anyway, I went with an actress who's been around for a while by the name of Alexis Bledel. She rose to prominence as Rory in The Gilmore Girls. But more recently, she has been in a handful of things all over the place, TV and movies. She was Beth in Mad Men, and she was also in Sin City, which is, you know, just like Gone with the Wind in many ways.
Very similar, yes.
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants she was in back then. And most recently, she's been in also The Gilmore Girls, which is now back on TV for some strange reason. But yeah, she's just, even back to her Rory days, she's just got that great, very just sweet, sweet face and just kind of smiling eyes and smiling, you know, mouth, because that's where they generally come from. And
well put, my friend.
And I just think that she would just play that sort of you know, secondary female character, that best friend, and also, you know, run through her own storyline, which is, you know, deep and sad at times as well. So I think that she should be getting better roles than she is, because she's a talented actress, and I think too many people have pigeonholed her into the Rory character, but she's quite excellent.
I don't know about talented actress, but if you want somebody sweet with luminous eyes, you know, she'll definitely do it.
And she can
say her lines.
80% of what I'm looking for in this.
Yeah,
role.
Yeah. I feel like if you want to nail a casting, just for somebody that's that can be sweet and sad, Alexis Bledel will do it.
Yeah. Well, the hard part is that she sort of got pigeonholed in Rory roles because she still looks exactly the same as she did when she was in Gilmore Girls. Like, she looks a little older, but not a lot, man. It's she just has a really young face, and I think will for a long time. And you know, I think
she's
going
to go from 16 to 60.
Yeah.
She's almost 40 and she still looks like she's 22.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Yep. Agreed. So that would be my only concern, especially since she has a matronly presence in this movie, more so, you know, especially than Scarlett. I mean, Scarlett has none of that, even when she is a mother. And whereas Melanie has that sort of forgiving, motherly sort of vibe to it. So that would be my only concern. But I do like her a lot, and I think she should be given a chance. So I'm hip. I could do that.
I really liked her in a little known movie that I think nobody saw, called Violet and Daisy, which I believe I picked for my hidden gems.
Yeah.
And she plays Saoirse Ronan's best friend. And in the movie, they look exactly the same age. And they're quite far apart in age.
Yeah, probably 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Yeah. Crazy.
And then we shall move on to Andy and his pick for Ashley, which I'm excited for.
Oh, I hope I don't disappoint, but I probably will. Ashley Wilkes, who is a man, was played by Leslie Howard, also a man. Ashley Wilkes is the object of Scarlett's affections throughout the entire movie, including her three marriages to other men. He is married to Melanie Wilkes, who is a dear friend of Scarlett, so yeah, it got weird. Ashley vacillates between rebuffing and succumbing to Scarlett's wiles. He also doesn't even pretend to drop the British accent. Doesn't give it a single moment's thought.
No F's to give.
No F's to give. He is the inspiration, as I said earlier, I believe, that Kevin Costner used for his performance as a British man, in air quotes, in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Same thing with Christian Slater. Anyhow.
They probably should have just switched places, because Kevin Costner's got way more of a Southern drawl.
Yeah, that's true. He should have. Oh, well.
I mean, granted, the movies were made 70 years apart, but
details.
They can make it work.
Yeah.
Hollywood can do anything these days.
Yeah, we'll quantum leap that.
Yeah. So Ashley Wilkes is, like I said, the love interest of Scarlett, and he's a more of a minor character, I guess, than I realized upon. My memory of it was that he was a more of a major player in the movie, but he's really not in the movie a ton compared to, say, Melanie. Melanie's actually in the movie a lot more than Ashley is. But I wanted the actor for Ashley to be a handsome fella that would definitely be someone that Scarlett would pine for. But I had a really hard time finding someone who had the right amount of spinelessness that I felt like Leslie Howard brought to the role, because he portrays Ashley as this noble Southern gentleman who is, you know, being true to Melanie, who also happens to be his cousin, which is weird, but that's a different story. But at the same time, he clearly has feelings for Scarlett, and they almost seem like they had a history kind of before the plot of this movie started. We don't really know that. So there are a couple instances in the movie where he kind of lets his guard down and gives in to her kind of relentless assault on him, this siege of romance. But anyway, I chose Armie Hammer for this role. So he is a tall, handsome drink of water that I think my Scarlet pick could easily be seen kind of wooing after and pining for. And they're not too different in age, but I think you could make it seem that maybe he's older, you know, old enough that, and you could portray her as young enough to make the age difference seem a little more profound, because I got the sense that that was how this was supposed to be. Like, she's a 16-year-old girl at the start of the movie who is pining after this gentleman who, you know, goes off to be an officer in the war. So he's clearly old enough to do those things. And there might've been that age difference at the beginning where she's still kind of a child and he's becoming an adult and he's realizing how young and silly she is. So anyway, Armie Hammer is my choice for Ashley Wilkes.
I think it would make it a little bit more believable as far as how much Scarlett pines for him, because even though he is not in the film screen time a lot, his presence hovers over the entire movie. And, you know, I mean, especially in the latter half when she's with Rhett, like his presence is everything in that part of the movie in terms of their relationship. So,
yeah,
I think your memory of that plays into that quite a bit.
Mark, tell us of Mammy.
Yeah. Mammy's a smart old soul. She's one of the foremost of the O'Hara's slave staff and is one of the only normal people in the film. There's not much more to say about the character. Mammy was originally portrayed by Hattie McDaniel, about whom there's more to say than there is about the character of Mammy. Hattie McDaniel was the first African-American to win an Academy Award. For this film, even. She won the Best Supporting Actress.
Good for you, Hattie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good on Hattie McDaniel. I was struck by really how normal Mammy actually is. It was just really very level. Kind of just keeps things running. And not in a overseer or type A sort of way. She just has things under control. Anyway, I picked an actress named Danielle Brooks. Danielle Brooks is in the Aziz Ansari series, Master of None, where she plays his agent. But where you really know her is from Orange is the New Black, where she plays Tasty.
She's incredibly talented, like a really good singer.
Yeah, yeah. And
as was Hattie McDaniel.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So yeah, I actually think that in Orange is the New Black, the character of Tasty is a... I think there's some comparisons to be drawn with Mammy, where Tasty is something of the level head and the voice of reason, sometimes the moral compass of the black inmates at Litchfield. And it's kind of at the center of how things go. When they go really well, it's because of her, that sort of thing. So yeah, that is my pick, is Danielle Brooks in the role of Mammy.
That's perfect. I got to say, that is spot on. Nice work. She's so great. I just love her presence. She just has such a good vibe. You kind of want to root for her in Orange is the New Black. Like, even amongst all of the things that happen, you really do want good things to happen to her, even though they don't always do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's definitely one of the favorite characters of the show.
Yeah. All right, so that wraps it up for the minor characters and for the first part of our discussion of Gone with the Wind. The next episode will be out on August 8th, when we'll be discussing the plot, tech, and filmmaking changes we would make in our remake of Gone with the Wind. If you'd like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you can find show notes as well as links to actors, actresses, movies, everything discussed in this episode. You can also find us on both Twitter and Facebook at username mathishardnet. So hit us up there, follow us, and let us know what you think of the episode. So, gentlemen, until the next time we get to have a group nap together, Southern Belle style, may the force be with you.
And also with you.